Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's March 26th, 1351, and another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Ariel, Rebecca, and Ali, the Retrospectors.
Gentlemen, choose your weapons. Lance, sword, mace, battle axe. Local peasants, come and have a butcher's at what's going on. You're more than welcome. We'll take a truce for provision of refreshment and medical care. Ready and fight! That's something like, I imagine, what the referees said today in history in 1351, when one of the most celebrated battles of the 14th century took place, even though it was of almost insignificant military purpose, and like I said, it had referees. The so-called Combat of the 30.
And the 30 were the 30 knights on either side, the English side and the French side, who had met at an agreed spot, an oak tree, between two towns in Brittany. A bit similar to the English Civil War. This was a situation where rival forces occupied neighbouring towns, and this was the case here. The two sides were actually posted in fortresses that were only about 6 miles apart from one another, and they were clearly bored.
Yeah. So what led to this rather bored battle was that it came within the War of Breton Succession, which was a conflict that lasted from 1341 to 1365. We've discussed it before, but basically the war broke out following the death of Duke III of Brittany, who died without leaving an heir. And as a consequence, there were two claimants for the Duchy of Brittany. Basically, on the one side, a group that were supported by the King of England and the other that's supported by the King of France. And each of these found their champions in these respective groups who had turned up to fight this really chivalric battle. It really wasn't intended to do anything other than be for the honour of warfare. It wasn't, you know, like, let's just get 30 guys each and duke it out and whoever wins, wins the war. That wasn't the intention here. But at the same time, it fell within this broader conflict.
Well, there was a wider context as well, which is the Hundred Years' War, of which this succession to the Duchy of Brittany melee was part, and a truce which had been called in Calais in 1347. So the governments had said, stop fighting each other right now, we're having a truce, even though we're in the midst of this broader war and a smaller war. And this is where you get to what Rebecca was talking about with the boredom issue, because as you say, sort of, there wasn't a stated aim, but then retrospectively people pretended there was. The French chronicler Monstrelet said that, quote, the nobility of Brittany would not return without having proved by battle who had the fairest mistresses. It was about who had the best women these guys were fighting for. But what was clearly the case was they're knights, they're armed, and they're not allowed to fight. So they're just like, well, on the down low, let's meet up at the oak and just have a barney.
Yeah, I mean, they really could make a war out of anything at this point. I mean, considering this was a battle for succession between Charles de Blois, who at this time was imprisoned, and John of Montfort, the English back claimant, who had died. So this is one guy in prison, one guy's dead, and they are still fighting over which one of them is somehow going to be the Duke of Brittany. But it was their respective wives who were kind of leading the factions at this point. It was Charles de Blois' wife, Joan, who was leading the French-backed side, and John of Montfort's wife, Joanna, who was leading the English-backed side.
But who was fitter?
Well, this is kind of how it turned out, because Jean de Beaumanoir, who was the leader of the French forces, he rocked up at the English-controlled fortress and he challenged their leader, Sir Robert Bemborough, by citing these two women. He said, have ye within there never a man at arms or two or three who would fain cross swords with other three for love of their ladies? And he was referring to Joan and Joanna. But in one of the accounts we have from the time, from the chronicler Jean Froissart, Bemborough said that single combats, this was a recognised form, it was basically the forerunner of the duel. He said they gave the participants the name of fool rather than honourable renown and proposed instead a 30-on-30 battle. And this was a variation on the pas d'armes, which was a popular pastime for underemployed knights. This is the sense I'm getting. There were really too many knights around for what they actually needed to do.
Yeah. Just walking around the northern French countryside going, you'll never guess what he said about his wife.
Yeah. They would basically set up a checkpoint on a bridge or a city gate, and they would just make other knights fight them to pass through. It was just a big, stupid game. And this Combat of the 30 was a bit of a variation on that, with the oak tree kind of acting as the bridge.
But it was also meant to be this great act of chivalry, and one of the things that was celebrated afterwards was the degree to which the rules as they had been agreed upon were largely adhered to. Actually, the fighting itself was pretty chaotic.
Metal on face is what we're describing here, over a course of hours.
Yes, exactly. And at the time that they took their first break, there were 6 men lying dead. Then they started up again. And in this second part of the battle, Bembera, who was the leader of the English side, was fatally wounded during this thing that then became quite controversial, which was that one of the Breton squires on the other side got onto his horse. No one was meant to be mounted. And he then charged into the English line, and that was considered rather unsporting. He overthrew 7 of the English champions, and then the rest were forced to surrender. Everyone on both sides ended up pretty seriously wounded, with 8 or 9 dead on the English side and 4 to 6 dead on the French side.
Yeah, the combat would have been so bloody and full on. And the reason they took this recess, you know, I mean, yeah, there were referees there and there were rules in this way that was kind of seemed to be somehow gentlemanly. But the reason they had to take a recess was they were just totally exhausted and knackered from having slain each other across the face.
Yeah, so both sides lost some men, but it seems like, you know, Bembera's death obviously put a bit of a downer on the English side, and his death in the end was pretty gruesome. Apparently, although they're referred to as being knights, the majority on both sides are actually squires, you know, sort of apprentice knights. And it was one of these, Alain de Kerenray, who was apparently enraged when Bembera taunted Beaumanoir, his leader. He thrust his spear under the skull, you know, got in the visor of his helmet, and then Geoffrey Dubois apparently launched his axe into Bembera's chest, killing him stone dead. And then as the French took their English prisoners away with them, apparently Beaumanoir at this point was badly wounded. He cried out to his friend Dubois for water, and at this point Dubois apparently turned and told him, drink your blood, Beaumanoir, your thirst will pass, which, unhelpful.
Mm. Oh, just so grotesque as well. Sounds like something from the HBO miniseries of this event. But I suppose the fact that it went on for so many hours shows at least, A, that the teams were quite evenly matched, and B, that medieval armour was quite effective.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, otherwise this would have lasted minutes, wouldn't it? They're having each other with spears.
Or C, you sort of end up with this image of kind of half-hearted, gentlemanly fighting up until that point that, as Rebecca said, there was an actual insult exchanged, which kind of enraged someone and made them, you know, the red mists descend. And for that person, at least, you know, made them really fight with a great kind of fervor. I just sort of have this mental image of this lovely afternoon that ends up being ruined by, you know, one person getting a bit out of hand and quite, you know, the sort of death resulting generally.
We were all here for a gentlemanly battle to the death, and yeah, he turned it into a massacre.
Exactly.
Well, supposedly, Beaumanoir's men carried off the surviving English to their castle in Josselin as prisoners, where, according to the chronicler Jean Froissart, they tended to their wounds and then later politely let them be ransomed. That would have been in keeping with the single combat etiquette for knights. The goal was to force your opponent's surrender and then return them for a ransom rather than kill them. Although, weirdly, a plaque at Castle Josselin apparently says that they just executed all of the English, so I don't know.
It's funny because it came to stand for such different things as the years progressed. You know, the Combat of the 30 came to be seen by the French as this moment where the English knights are depicted as villains and the French knights are these loyal and worthy local warriors who came, at least according to some balladeers, to the defence of the local peasantry. And so it came to stand for this sort of local gentry and aristocracy performing their social duty to protect the people. So, you know, that kind of ended up justifying the privileges that nobles held as the defenders of the weak. But for the English, when they did talk about it, which they didn't terribly frequently because they actually went on to win the war in question, Belgian, so this was kind of a footnote to them that didn't really matter. When they spoke about it, they tended to harp on about the unfairness of that moment where the squire did something unsportsmanlike. And actually,
well,
that was
horse.
Yeah, and that was meant to be representative of the fact that French in general couldn't be trusted.
And this is actually one of the last notable occasions of single combat fighting. And that was because the tactical use of longbows and pikes meant that hand-to-hand combat was no longer really practical on the battlefield. What had been done before is that occasionally, you know, it wasn't the norm exactly, but you could have leaders call one another out in the battlefield because they would be so close to their opponents and they could sort of step forward into the middle and fight on behalf of everybody, which must have been great if you were one of the peasants with the scythe in the background being like, great, you guys sort it out. But then it was actually during the Hundred Years' War that the English started using longbows and pikes against the French cavalry, which was absolutely devastating and meant that opponents no longer wanted to be so close to each other on the battlefield.
Yeah, that makes sense as to why you'd have like the monarch or the top knight at the front, because they'd be doing the talking. You can't do the talking if you've got an arrow going through your head.
Good innovation from kings going, well, sorry, I would if I could hear them, I'd be right in there fighting for all of you, but as it is, we're too far away to hear who they're calling for. This episode first aired last year exclusively to members of Club Retrospectors.
Join today and unlock a new episode this Sunday.
Patreon.com/retrospectors